You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
Richard Condy Smith. I was born in Kaysville. Birthday is February 28, 1935.
Richard Smith is a wise, gentle man who has lived a faithful and blessed life. He's married to his lovely wife, Norma, and together they have four sons and many grandchildren, even a great-grandchild. He was raised in Utah and after attending BYU, working many jobs, joining the reserves, and getting married, he ended up in Kansas City for dental school. He then set up his practice in California. He has traveled the world doing humanitarian dental work, as well as serving four missions abroad and then for 3 years at the conference center. He has been a bishop and a stake patriarch and has blessed the lives of many.
I have two siblings, one older sister, Edna, and one younger sister, Joanne. My mother was Helen Condy Smith. My father was Farrell P. Smith. And my first memories were in St. George, where he was stationed with the government, the soil conservationist of the Department of Agriculture. And I remember the mountain above our house there, and that's about all. My mother was a wonderful mother. My father traveled a lot, and he was gone and would frequently bring home visitors that were there helping him with his job from the federal government. And so she would have them to dinner. So I met a lot of his people that came to work with him. And he was wonderful. When he was younger and they lived in Kaysville, he helped build a log cabin for Boy Scouts. So all of his life, he was on the commission for Boy Scouts. And that was paramount in my life, being a Boy Scout. But my mother was always home, prepared dinner, and was just a sweet mother. I don't remember her ever losing her temper, getting mad at me. I felt love and being loved in my family all the time with my sisters and my mother and father. Then he was transferred to Cedar City. We lived on the main street, and we had wonderful neighbors. And I remember the father would come on the back porch. He'd throw out dimes and nickels to the kids, and they would jump for joy. And shortly after that, he was transferred to Fillmore, where I started grade school. And in Fillmore, my younger sister was born. She was born at home, didn't go to the hospital. So I remember fun times in Fillmore. As soon as summer came around, we were outside playing. We went up to the Chalk Creek in the summer. And when summer came, I always looked forward to summer. And we took off our shirts and our shoes and just went wild. I learned to ski early on when winter came around. I got skis for Christmas along with the BB gun. And there wasn't a ski area there, but my dad took me north to Holden. And they had a mountain there. And I climbed up on myself, skied down a couple of times, and then, of course, later, when I was older and in Provo, we had a group that we skied as much as we could. And before a ski area up here was Sundance, it was called Temp Haven, and I worked there in the summer on the chairlift, so I skied free, and I skied up till 3 years ago. Fillmore, we had a pasture in the back with a barn and then a garden and the house, which none of my friends did. We had a 4-H project to raise pigs, and two of my friends used my pig pen. So we had three pigs in my pig pen. My sister had chickens, chicken coop. And so we took our pigs to the auction, and I think they had blue ribbons on them or something. And then they, I think, auctioned them off. So I started high school there then. I looked up to the bigger boys that always seemed to get things they wanted. I was short. I always wanted to be taller. And it just so happened that they needed a smaller wrestler. The wrestling coach talked me into wrestling in the 110-pound division. I was 95 pounds. So I wrestled and went to state and got beat. I always thought he beat me because he was a senior, and that made the difference. At that point, after the ninth grade, my father was transferred to Provo, and we lived in Orem. and started Lincoln High School. So again, I was still small and didn't get my real height until between my junior and senior year. Everybody said, oh, wow, you're really tall now. You really grew. The year before we graduated, three of us went up to Hill Air Force Base where we had jobs there. And we were working on airplanes and had a wonderful time. Summer, we went to the lake there and swam and just had a wonderful summer. Back to school, and our last year, I tried playing football. I was on the second team, didn't do very well.
During his senior year, Richard and some friends hiked Mount Timpanogos.
We went as seniors in high school. There were five of us. We had our picture taken. They put it in the News Chronicle, I guess. And we think highly of that. And then on my mission, the Christensen's, he was about a little younger than I was, but he hadn't climbed it. And so we said, well, let's climb it when we get home. So after we got home, Brother Christensen, myself, climbed Mount Temple, and we didn't get a good early start. And so it was a little harder than when you're younger, but we made it to the top.
To get himself through school at BYU, Richard worked many different jobs. This included saving trees in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Started school and I wanted to do something outside, so I started in geology and taking all the classes necessary for geology. The next job I had was working for the Forest Service, and there was had a project that had been going on for years. There was a fungus that attacked the white pine and killed them, and you would see these brown trees, and it was because of this fungus. So we were there, camped out in the wild, and about 20, 25, 30 workers, most of them college young men, mostly from the South. We had our mess table there, and they cooked meals for us. And then every morning we would hike to the mountain where it was marked off, and we would work in lanes to find these bushes and pull them up to preserve the white pine. And so that was a whole summer, and I stayed more than, 3 months and got a bonus for staying that long. And so after that, I worked in a service station while in school and then in the hospital. They were drafting, you know, this Korean War time. And so I signed up for the reserves. I had basic training in Fort Ord and then went to San Antonio and then was on a reserve after that. And when it was time to consider mission, I was drawn between finishing school and going on a mission. Decided to go on a mission. I was called to the Eastern States, which is New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. Went in August, just after the Hill Cumorah pageant, so I just missed it. So I could hardly wait for the next time that pageant would be on that next summer. So that next summer pageant, I was one of General Moroni's soldiers and had short pants and a helmet and a shield and everything. I remember one of the younger girls would come and serve in the pageant from BYU and Utah State. I remember one comment I got, oh boy, you sure have good looking legs. The pageant came around just before I was to leave the mission field, and that time I was called to be one of the people that introduced the different stages of the play. It was such a lifting experience to be in that pageant and to be there with over 1,000 people sitting there with makeshift benches on the Hill Cumorah. The very last part of that pageant, I was the one that kind of closed it, referring to the Book of Mormon and what had happened after these Nephites and Lamanites had their lives. And speaking to this over 1,000 people, it was like I was bearing my own testimony of the truthfulness of the Book of Mormon and what had transpired and how the Book of Mormon is so important and is a scripture that everyone should read.
After completing his faithful mission, Richard returned to BYU where he met Norma Doan, who would later become his wife.
Went to school again and had a year or so to finish. And at that point, they weren't hiring geologists. My father had mentioned dentistry. I had a good friend that was dentist, and it just seemed like the right thing to do. So I started dental school. And on my mission, I had a companion, Gordon Smith, and he came to BYU also. We had five former missionaries that lived together. And Gordon told me about this young lady from California who spent some time in Boise where he lived, and she was a movie star. And would I like to meet her? Of course, I would like to meet her. And it just so happened that he and I were going to the cafeteria, and lo and behold, here was Norma Doan with her cousin, Pam. And so we went over, and it was a wonderful experience. When she was about 14, she was acting in the local theater there, The Hale. But during that time, or just after, she was auditioned and went into this movie. It was called Come Next Spring, and there were some well-known actors in it, actresses, and she had a very small part, but it's a speaking part. She was called Lovey, and so I call her Lovey now because of that. So yes, she was, I thought, a movie star. And from that point on, we dated off and on, and finally it came to the point where she said she was going to go to California, and I was heartbroken that she would be leaving, but there she decided that she wanted to come home and continue dating me. She was a wonderful person. I met her family, and it just seemed to be the one. And I was dragging my feet. She was getting excited. When I told her I was going to school, I'd been accepted to dental school at Kansas City. I suggested that we would write and stay in touch, and I'd be back the next summer or whatever. And she was really disappointed. And so that kind of brought it maybe to a head. And soon after that, I asked her to marry me. I sat down with her parents, asking their permission to marry their daughter, and we were married. And it was the next couple of weeks, I'd been accepted to dental school at Kansas City, and then we were married, and we drove off in an old Buick automobile that I had all the way to Kansas City.
Richard had been accepted into dental school at the University of Missouri at Kansas City. They were there for 4 years.
Started dental school, and it was a wonderful experience. It had its hard times. We had no money. We lived in government housing. And some of our neighbors would say, well, you're lucky. You're not always going to live here like we are. But it was by the stockyards in Kansas City. One bad experience that will never leave me is when two Relief Society sisters from the ward came by with some groceries. And I said, we don't need that. Oh, really? Well, no. Okay. And my wife in the background said, what have you done? How could you have done that? And so many times I thought about that, how ridiculous it was not to accept an aid from the church. So graduation came. It was time to find a place to practice. My wife Norma's brother was practicing in Anaheim, and it just made sense. That's where we would go. I was there 2 to 3 years. We lived in an apartment. We, of course, had two children at that point. I also had to go to another dentist to work part-time because there wasn't enough patients there in his office. So I was thinking of other places, and Norma's sister lived in Woodland Hills, and they encouraged us to move out that way. So we moved out in the valley to Westlake Village, and I opened up a practice with another doctor. But then I met other dentists in Thousand Oaks, and we were talked about building a building. So just across this highway from Westlake Village, we built our own building. There were five dentists, orthodontist, a periodontist, a couple of general practitioners, and started my practice there. So we had a wonderful practice and a wonderful assistants. I enjoyed dentistry very much. And as my older son came along, he went to USC, graduated, and came practice with me for 3 years.
Richard and Norma had four wonderful boys, Craig, Blair, Gregory, and Bradley.
I just remember trying to keep up with them, doing the things that needed to be done, and assisting Norma. And as soon as they were old enough to do things, we did things, and they were always willing. We were out playing, whether football or soccer or whatever. In California, we would go to the beach, and Lake Powell. This was an annual thing. We would go there. I had a boat, and so as soon as they were able, they were water skiing, and we just enjoyed being together. Gregory came home from school. What did you do in school? Well, we had a police officer there that gave us a lecture, and he said that police work was the second oldest profession. We said, oh, really? And so right then we thought, okay, talked about the second oldest profession, and everybody knows what the oldest profession is, right? So we asked him, well, what is the oldest profession? Well, lying and stealing. And we, oh, thank heavens. In the meantime, in Westlake Village, I served as bishop. We built a new building there just on the county line, Ventura on one side, Los Angeles on the other. Had a wonderful ward, wonderful people, and it was a beautiful place to live. Soon after that, I was called to be patriarch and served there in the Newbury Park stake as patriarch. As a patriarch, I had wonderful experience. I felt so inadequate when I was called. They had the booklet on patriarchs, how you do this and this, the mechanics of the thing. And then it comes down to the Spirit must guide. The words just seemed to come. I remember from time to time, some were very, you might say, very easy. And others, I would say, would maybe be a little more difficult, waiting for that inspiration to come. You're never released. It's a forever calling, but the point comes where they'll say you're non-functional. And at that point, if you have a family, you can still do that.
Richard was able to give his grandchildren patriarchal blessings, which he said was a very special experience. During his career, Richard had many opportunities to travel abroad doing humanitarian dental work.
My brother-in-law belonged to the organization called AYUDA. So after school, I started going with him on AYUDA expeditions. It started with two physicians on the ship USS Hope, and they came back and branched out into dentistry. And we started in South America. First trip I went on was Guatemala and met some wonderful dentists there. And we saw as many patients as we could and came home. And it was wonderful for them to see what could be done to some of these third world countries. We went sometimes more than once a year. From Guatemala, we went to Peru. That's where we climbed Machu Picchu. Other South American countries, India, Africa, Russia. So we would often do our clinics in the LDS chapels, and the local dentist would arrange for us to set up a clinic. And many times the missionaries would be there visiting with the patients as they were waiting for us. So we felt like we were accomplishing a lot that way. That was a big part of my life.
I asked Richard if he had any funny experiences with patients.
I had a good friend that served with me in the bishopric. He was an older couple. So we were maybe early on talking about his home care and taking care of himself, talking about brushing. And yes, I brush my teeth first thing in the morning. Oh, really? Now, let's see. Is that the best time? You've brushed your teeth early in the morning. Then you've eaten breakfast, lunch, dinner, spent the night before you brush your teeth again. I tried to explain that to him. Probably any other time other than first thing in the morning is the best time to brush your teeth.
Richard had a very successful dental career and had a reputation of being the painless dentist. But all good things must come to an end, and Richard retired and sold his practice.
Quit my practice, and the associate took over. I got several letters wishing me the best for me on my retirement, what they were doing to miss me and how they had been treated. They felt like they had really had good treatment. And each of those letters made me feel good. And I think I had a practice where we care of people and they were well cared for. As it was time to retire, it was only logical. We had two mothers living in Provo. So this is where we moved, and it was like coming home. I was called to be a patriarch to a BYU fourth stake and had wonderful experience with the young people, meeting them, and my wife served as scribe, transcribing those blessings. Then, of course, in between, we had missions.
Together, Richard and Norma served in Indonesia, Cambodia, Malaysia, Russia, and at the conference center.
In Indonesia, just towards the end of our mission, 9/11 occurred, and they took out the missionaries. They gave us 24 hours to prepare. In the meantime, our wonderful friend who served us so well, Pulleyman, we called him Pulley, and he was just like a third member of the companionship, my wife and I. He was kind of a street urchin when the missionaries met him. Came along, joined the church, went on a mission. He was there for us and became our driver. If we had questioned, well, this is what you need to do, we helped him in Hawaii get his degree. And he goes back to Indonesia. His patriarchal blessing told him that he would be important there. And he is, but he works for this company and they make steel for reinforcing. And he has wonderful children now, and his wife was Muslim, joined the church. And it's just a wonderful story of somebody joining the church and becoming what he really can be. He was her driver. And as he learned I was a patriarch, he said, couldn't he have a patriarchal blessing? I asked Salt Lake, one of the apostles, said, yes, you have permission to give patriarchal blessings in Indonesia. There'd be a limit of 30, and they'd have to speak English. And so this young man knew this, but then came 9/11. So just before we left, as we were packing up, he said, Elder Smith, you didn't give me my blessing. Oh, so there on the stool in the kitchen with all of our gear there, I gave him his patriarchal blessing. And then we were off to Singapore, where we were there for 2 weeks to be reassigned. And we were reassigned to Cambodia with several other couples. And we met some wonderful friends with our missionary service there. And a lot was accomplished. We felt very good about that mission.
Richard has had so many incredible spiritual experiences throughout his life. I asked him when he gained a testimony of the truthfulness of the gospel.
I think with my parents, the church was always there. I mean, from as soon as I remember, we were going to church. Here's the ward, we go to church. Then we have primary. I remember primary. And so my father served in many bishoprics. Mother was always in the Relief Society. So just as a family, we went to church. And I think my testimony was just there from the beginning. And I was keeping the commandments and doing everything. And when it came time to decide on a mission, that was my decision. I wasn't asked or prodded into doing that. I wanted to go on a mission. I remember we were someplace and some lady said, well, they send the very best missionaries to the Eastern States. And I thought, wow, lady, I'm sure they send the best missionaries everywhere. But I always remember that and maybe felt that kind of carried over, feeling that here we are where the church was restored and this is what we're going to do. And my testimony grew. I have a wonderful family. Our sons have come along and have done so well. These grandchildren, our family has grown together. The family is the foundation of the world, really, and certainly the church. I love the gospel. It's true. I just wish that more people would apply that in their lives, and the world would be such a wonderful place. I love the gospel.
As you've heard, Richard has led an amazing life. He's provided so well for his family, worked at his career in dentistry, and served so freely. He loves his wife, children, grandchildren, and loves the Lord. A huge thank you to the Smith family for purchasing this episode and to Norma for letting me interview her. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website at hearingourheritage.com.